against Harris is our next case for argument this morning.
Do you know that case? Both the first names were James. In that case, both the first names were James. In this case, both the first names are Timothy. Funny.
Mm-hmm. We'll be taking a brief recess now while Judge Rovner goes home to secure her house. No, I guess we'll continue. Mr. Elliott.
May it please the Court, Tim Elliott with Kirkland & Ellis. Also with me this morning are Ben Langer, Mary Louise Gribben, and Gretchen Fox, also with Kirkland & Ellis, representing the appellant, Lamard Harris. On this appeal, we raised three issues, two of which I'd like to address today.
You know, before you even begin, I just want to say something about this. If you were to pursue this using a habeas petition, you would be able to build a better record about the damaged relationship between Harris and his lawyer, the possible testimony of Lakeisha Vaughn, the trial lawyer's strategy in declining to impeach key witnesses, and the missing letters to the district court. Am I wrong?
Well, I think you're probably correct in that, Your Honor, but I do believe that given the fact that in this case Harris actually asked for a new lawyer prior to his second trial, we've got something a little bit different from the ordinary ineffective assistance of counsel situation. In this case, I think there is a reason.
But
given
that we have an evidentiary hearing where it was explored either why the lawyer did what he did or what the missing witnesses would have testified had they been called?
No, that hearing did not occur, Your Honor, because the district court...
See, that's the problem. Without that record, and in particular without the record of why the lawyer did what he did, you can't possibly prevail on an ineffective assistance claim. This court has been in existence now for 103 years. The number of ineffective assistance claims that have succeeded on direct appeal without an evidentiary hearing during that time is zero. Might suggest that maybe your client would be better off pursuing this on collateral attack after an evidentiary hearing.
I may be inclined to agree with you on the standalone ineffective assistance of counsel claim, but I do believe that this court's decisions in Zilgis and Brown and Bjorkman and other cases suggest that when a motion is made for appointment of new counsel, the district court has the obligation to go through the process that you just described the first time around and not require a defendant like Lamard Harris to suffer a conviction and spend time in incarceration while the issue of whether or not he should have had a new counsel appointed is sorted out. I think in the instance where there is a request for new counsel, it is appropriate to bring it up on direct appeal.
The reason both Judge Rovner and I are raising this is because you have, in fact, brought up an ineffective assistance argument. And if we decide it now, your client will not be able to raise it again on direct appeal. The ineffective assistance argument will be decided once and once only. The question is, do you believe it is in your client's interest that that be done now?
Or do you want to withdraw
your appeal?
Well, I don't know that we would withdraw the entire appeal. Based on your comments, Judge Easterbrook, I would be inclined to withdraw the standalone ineffective assistance of counsel argument. However, I think we still, in the context of
you,
the motion
have
for new counsel...
We have other arguments,
okay.
Certainly here, but we will take the standalone ineffective assistance claim as deferred to collateral attack.
Thank you, Your Honor. Focusing on the motion to appoint new counsel, at the outset, I think that there are two points that are important. The first is that there is a presumption, as this court has held, in favor of defendants having the counsel of their choice.
But you're going to argue that in the habeas, aren't you? Do you want to talk about... Go ahead. It's your argument.
Yep.
Your argument.
What I'm about to suggest, Judge, is that there are two points that I want to make. The first is that there's a presumption that a defendant has a counsel of his choice. And the second is that in this case, the stakes are very high. Lamard Harris was sentenced to 20 years as a result of his conviction. those two factors, I would propose to the court, suggest that the district court, when a new counsel was requested before the second trial, had an obligation to take Mr. Harris's request seriously and to review his concerns thoughtfully. And it is difficult to look at the record in this case. I would say it's impossible to look at the record in this case and walk away with the notion that the district court did either. We believe the district court erred. This court has identified essentially four factors to consider in whether or not a district court's denial of a motion to appoint new counsel or substitute counsel was error. The first factor is whether a motion was timely.
Have you withdrawn or not? You are arguing what a few moments ago you said you had withdrawn.
Well, I...
You're going to force us into making a decision here.
Well, Your Honor, I view it as two separate issues, and maybe we're speaking past each other. The first issue is whether or not the district court erred in refusing to appoint new counsel prior to the hearing. In other words, whether or not it was error to deny Lamart Harris's motion for new counsel. The second issue, which is
your problem on the denying motion for a new counsel is that it seems to be premised on the belief that a defendant is entitled to a lawyer he can get along with well, and the Supreme Court has said there's no such right. That's the holding of Morris against Slappy.
I don't think I necessarily agree with
that. Well, you can agree with Morris against Slappy or not, but it is a decision of the Supreme Court. So what the defendant is entitled to is effective assistance of counsel, not his best friend or anything like that. But that's the source of my colleague's concern and mine. It's not clear one can slice away an ineffective assistance claim from a claim that he was entitled to a lawyer he more liked or could get along with or felt good about or something like that.
This court in Vilgus and other cases has said a part of the inquiry on a motion to appoint new counsel or an appeal of a motion to appoint new counsel is to determine whether or not the error, if there was an error in appointing new counsel, was harmless or not. And in order to do that, this court has said we have to address the issue of ineffective assistance of counsel.
How did this issue come to the attention of the court based on the record?
It came to the attention of the court in a series of letters that Lamart Harris...
Are those of record?
Those are not in the record. The district court acknowledged at the June 16th hearing, which was the first day of Lamart Harris's second trial, that it had received the letters. However, those letters have been discarded. So the first formal record that we have is a request made the first day...
I add my voice to my colleagues, it's pretty hard to pull out ineffective assistance from the case you want to argue, even though in fact if you're not arguing ineffective assistance of the counsel, you're going to argue that the court didn't make findings of fact or hold a hearing. Was there a motion to do that? And as we go on and explore that, what happens?
Well,
we have to talk about the conduct of counsel.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. And as I understand this court's prior rulings, a district court has an obligation to undertake that sort of hearing when a motion is made. Now, I sense from this panel that what you are suggesting is that we withdraw this and pursue this via habeas. And I actually read Zilgus and the other cases as giving us another alternative, which is remand.
One has to be clear. You have the alternative. You have the option of raising it now. But it will be raised without a record. And if decided now, any argument along the lines of ineffective assistance is gone forever. There is no second bite at the apple.
I believe, Your Honor, that my response to that would be, and I see him in rebuttal time, my response to that would be twofold. Number one, this can be pursued via habeas. Or number two, the inquiry, and I think
your
point
that, you are mistaken. It is a bad idea to proceed on that assumption. It will not pan out.
what I'm trying to say.
You've got more help from this panel than I have ever seen in 20 years.
Your Honor, we will withdraw those two grounds for the appeal and pursue them on habeas.
We will. I don't want to, you know, it's a bad idea to do things spontaneously. Why don't you take some time to think about this, perhaps consult with your client, and let us know within a week whether you want us to pursue it or whether you want to withdraw it.
I will do that, Your Honor, but the only point I wish to make is this. I agree with you that there is an insufficient record. The only point I'm trying to make is that we believe the appropriate thing to do to create that record would be to remand to the district court on a direct appeal. That's why we brought this appeal, so that Lamart Harris does not have to go through the process of habeas. That was the only point, and that's what we understood Zilgus and other cases to indicate. We will take the court's indication.
I have a quick question for you. May I, Jesse?
Of course.
Did Kimberly Robinson participate at all in the second trial? Because it's unclear to me from the part of the record that you cited. The court said, we're going to trial with the two of you in this case. Did he mean McKinley and Robinson, or did he mean McKinley and Harris?
He meant I believe he meant McKinley and Robinson. And Kimberly Robinson did participate. She cross-examined a couple of the,
okay,
what I would call the less important witnesses.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elliott. Mr. Morrison.
Your Honor, in light of the withdrawal, at least the tentative withdrawal, if there are any questions for the government, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Otherwise.
Did you try the case?
I did, Your Honor. And Ms. Robinson was participating in the case. She was there throughout. Thanks, Judge.
Just tell me one thing, and I don't want to get into it either, but I was very interested in the fact that the first trial ended in a hung jury. And that makes it a pretty close case. And you conceded that Tamika Jones changed her testimony between the first and second trials about whether she reported Harris as a person with access to the gun. Harris has a lot of, or some examples of changed testimony. Am I right?
Tamika Jones changed her story as to that she told police when she reported her firearm was stolen. That she changed her story in that she told the police at that time that he had been there. That's what she changed. There was really no change of testimony as to whether or not he was there. And in fact, her mother testified that he was. And in fact, it was her mother whom Harris took back over to the street where the confrontation occurred. Thank you, Judge.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Mr. Elliott, we want to extend our thanks for your work, and we will anxiously await your final word on which issues you want us to decide, which issues you and your client want us to decide. Case taken under advisement.